Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And it's good to have you with us. I want to start with this is just an encouraging story. I just loved reading this. Four kids were lost in the jungle for 40 days after their plane crashed in the Amazon jungle. Four siblings, including an infant. How old were these kids? They were young. The youngest was 11 months old. They were found alive and well in the Colombian jungle on Friday. Wow. Their plane crashed, killing every adult aboard. The youngsters were ultimately located by one of the rescue dogs handled by the soldiers of the Colombian army. And the president of Colombia said, quote, "The jungle saved them. They are children of the jungle, and now they are also children of Colombia." So they're national heroes. At least the oldest kid. The oldest kid was 13 years old. 13, 9, 4 years old, and 11 months. So the 13-year-old, definitely a hero of Colombia. And what a great story that is. Very sad. The mother, another adult, and the pilot all died in the crash. And all the kids survived. They've been searching for these kids since they found the wreck. They found the wreck on May 16th. So this is how you know this story isn't fake, because you suspect everything is fake anymore. At least I do. And so you have to go back and check the news and see that back in mid-May, they were actually searching for the kids. They were searching for the planes. And so you can go back and you can check the contemporaneous news reports that were filed at the time and see that this story was not made up. And also, since this story has nothing to do with any political election or the forwarding of some particular political worldview, then you can assume that it wasn't made up. It was just that the kids' plane crashed and they managed to survive. So the New York Post, the journalists, they report that 40 days after the plane in which they were traveling crashed, killing everyone, so the children were found. As if they couldn't just say 40 days after the kids' plane crashed, as if we wouldn't know that the kids weren't actually flying the plane. We can figure that out, journalists, that the children weren't flying the plane. We would have assumed there was a pilot flying the plane, and you could have used a lot fewer words. And you would have been guilty of much better writing. But since you're urinalists, who I'm pretty sure the urinalists are all trained by lawyers now, so you can't write well anymore. What's more important is that you write every detail so that a second grader can understand it. I remember when I first started in marketing, I was told that I was to write to a sixth grade level. This was around 2006, 7. Now I think it's a second grade level. 40 days after the plane in which they were traveling, just in case. All right, I'll leave it alone. I'm off of that. All right. Meanwhile, Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber was found dead inside his cell. And at first, because he was 81, it seemed like, okay, he just died of old age like most people who should have been executed. But it turns out they're now investigating Ted Kaczynski's death as a suicide so that Ted Kaczynski can, at least in a carnal sense, have the last laugh on the justice system that he mocked for 50 years. From the time he started blowing up other liberals at universities until the day he ultimately killed himself in the penitentiary hospital, he was mocking the justice system the entire time, and he gets the last carnal laugh by deciding himself when he would be put to death rather than the just a system that he so accurately was emblematic of Ted Kaczynski. So we send congratulations to Ted Kaczynski because this is the last congratulations he'll get, because after this, he's in hell burning and suffering and misery and torment forever. So congratulations on everything. Well, not everything. Congratulations on having the last laugh, Ted, right up until the point that you were launched on the jet rocket straight to hell. All right, but it was ironic when liberals caught one liberal blowing up other liberals because they weren't liberal enough over the planet and the climate crisis and the population crisis and all that. It was ironic, disturbing, unpleasant, but I never felt a lot of emotional hatred or anger toward Ted Kaczynski. He was one of those mentally ill people that I could actually feel sorry for, because, all right, and so there we have that, Ted Kaczynski. Meanwhile, speaking of kids in the jungle and liberals, from the Death of the West file, fewer than 3.7 million babies were delivered in the United States last year. That's far below replacement level, as it has been since 2007. As I think it has been ever since I've been on the air, I've been talking about this story. That civilization will collapse just by demographics, or either collapse or be replaced by others who want to procreate. So and this is just the latest story. Last year, there was a decline from 2021, last year being 2022, this year being 2023, just in case you're listening. And it's 1,000 years from now and you've dug this up and you're a historian. This is they're talking about a decline in 2022 from 2021 here in the United States. And for whatever reason, the Centers for Disease Control counts the numbers of babies born. You would think that doesn't seem to fit. Except that the majority of the deep state, the occupants of the deep state, they view children as a disease. So I suppose that's why the CDC counts the birth rate. The Centers for Disease Control, to see if they can figure out how to control it. Seems like they're doing a pretty good job from their perspective. The replacement level would be 2.1 births per woman. We're at 1.66. I think it's 1.666 if you actually do the math. The rate has generally been below replacement in the United States since when? Since I went on the air in 1999 or 8 or 9? No. The rate has generally been below replacement since 1971, according to the Centers for Birth Control. Yeah, the Centers for Disease Control there. That's from the Death of the West file, as we catalog events along the road to the Death of the West here on the Weekly Worldview on a weekly basis. And from there, we go to the End of the World file, where we check in with another part of America, which is Canada. Uh-huh, Canada, that's right. Assisted suicide has become the third leading cause of death in Quebec. The third leading cause of death, that's right. And it's another record-shattering year of euthanasia deaths in Canada in 2023. This after a reported 35% rise in assisted suicides, which is, we used to call that murder. When you helped someone else to die, that was called murder. Or manslaughter, you know, depending on the circumstances. But assisted suicide, I think they came up with that one somewhere around 1971, back when the birth rate went below replacement here in the West. They came up with the idea of assisted suicide, and now it's so popular in Canada, at least in Quebec, it's the third leading cause of death. 13,500, what the urinalists at Breitbart call state-sponsored suicides in 2022. State-sponsored. I think even that's too... I can see the urinalists at Breitbart are trying to be somewhat accusatory, but even that's a little too neat and clean for me. State-sponsored suicides? How about legal murders? We could, that's a term I would prefer, legal murders. Or just state killings of, you know, state-sponsored killings. So is there anything more to say about that? Oh, Canada legalized assisted suicide in 2016. And so when they first legalized it, the very first year, it was a record number. Well, because there were no state-sponsored killings before 2016, at least not that were legal. And so the following year, it was a record. And then every year thereafter, it's been a record. That's right, because the state's appetite for murdering people grows every year. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's been a record every year, and we're looking at assisted suicide in Quebec within the next 2 to 5 years. Number one with a bullet. You have to look that one up for all you younger folks. Number one with a bullet. If you're over 40, you might understand what that means. Okay, so we go from the death of the West, the state-sponsored killing of Canada. It's a state-sponsored suicide happening in slow motion right in front of all of us, right up there in Canada, where everybody was so nice, eh? And they were always so friendly. You know, they'd complain about the Canadian dollar and whatnot, but they were so friendly. Turns out they're tyrannical, masochist, sadist murderers. Tyrants, killers, eh? Who would have thought? They all seemed so friendly back when my school bus used to take us up to Marineland and Game Farm in Ontario. Toronto, I think. We used to go up there and look at all the strange Canadians. They'd look just like us. Except thicker coats. That's a little paler, but not much. That's what I remember. I remember Canada. You didn't even have to. We just drove across like driving into Buffalo or like crossing into Pennsylvania. But now it's like going into, well, actually, maybe not so much. Now that they're tyrannical, maniacal killers up there, maybe they look more like the people in Albany and Washington, D.C. And all of that, it's a hemispheric-wide phenomena that's going on there. All right, now, speaking of, do I want to get to this yet? I don't think I can get to this yet because speaking of hemisphere-wide spheres, hemisphere-wide, let's go to Cuba, where the Cuban government has signed an agreement with China, agreeing to the construction of an electronic eavesdropping facility in Cuba, roughly 100 miles from Florida. For those of you who matriculated in the government schools, Cuba's about 100 miles from Florida. Canada's about 1,000 miles. The U.S. Central Command is at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida. Fort Bragg is in North Carolina. It's now called Fort Liberty because a bunch of queers are in charge. And the Chinese are building an electronic eavesdropping facility in broad daylight because there's a bunch of queers in charge. Officials familiar with the agreement. Why are there officials in Washington familiar with the agreement? Well, they're Biden administration officials who are also members of the Chinese Communist Party, and they work in the same Politburo. They say that Cuba will receive several billion dollars to allow the construction of the facility by the Chinese. The officials in Washington declined to provide the spy facility's location or whether the construction had already begun. Why? Well, because they have to keep something secret, you know, from the people, obviously. Not from the CIA or the FBI or the WHO or the WEF, because this is all their agreement. They all work in the same Politburo, too. But, you know, we've got to keep a few secrets, you know. From the country bumpkins and the rednecks. Yeah. of View. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Thank you for sticking with us. Now, the city slickers too, by the way. Not just the country bumpkins and the rednecks and the hicks. That's where I come from. But even all you city slickers too who haven't even given in, who haven't all given in, although I will blame you city slickers for the fact that there's a bunch of queers in charge. Because out with the rednecks and the bumpkins, and we didn't have that part of town where that was allowed to happen. You city slickers, you allowed all that. And now the deviants and the perverts that you insisted would only be in the Tenderloin and the Castro and the East Village have taken over the country. It's disturbing and it's enraging and it's also, it's also motivating to me anyways. I am motivated to act and thus I do and speak and motivated to speak while I still can. Waiting for the feds to kick down my door and haul me off. It could happen. We go now to, speaking of hemispheric phenomena, we'll go to California, where we check in with the folks at Zero Hedge, and they report that on January 1st, 2024, the insane, criminally insane sex pervert cult that's running the state of California has mandated that all new trucks purchased for servicing the ports, the rail yards, and the distribution centers in the state, whatever that means, all those new trucks have to be zero emission vehicles. And industry leaders, not even just leaders, but like guys who drive the trucks, guys who don't have college degrees, they don't deal in statistics and data, they don't deal in models and global algorithms for climate change. They say that the availability of electric semi-trucks and the price of such trucks and the number of miles they can actually go and the cost of maintenance and replacement parts are all currently unknown. And so how do you tell the guy who actually drives the truck that you're going to have to buy a truck that we don't know if you can actually get it? We don't know how much it'll cost. We don't know how far it'll go. We don't know how much it'll cost to maintain it or replace the parts or if there are even be parts. But you have to buy it as of January 1st. About 10,000 drayage trucks are replaced every year in the state of California, meaning this will hit the trucking industry 10,000 trucks at a time. Until people start to starve to death in California, at which point everyone will say, wait a second, why were we listening to that pile of insane sex perverts running the government? What were we thinking about? So 10,000 trucks at a time, how long will it take before there's enough pain inflicted on the morons, the moronic populace of the state of California? Is it possible that they're this moronic, or is it possible that the system's just been fixed? I think it's a combination of the two, because one thing I have learned since COVID is the majority of people are moronic. In fact, a significant majority of people are moronic, and they will go along until they actually are in physical pain. They'll go along thinking this is what they have to do in order to get along, until it hurts so bad when the blood starts coming out of their ears, or maybe when their stomachs start to bloat because they can't get food, maybe they will realize that they shouldn't have gone along with all this and that it just wasn't worth it. Let's see. According to industry professionals, trucking industry professionals, in fact, one is quoted. He says, quote, "We're being forced to do something that's literally impossible." I wonder if he understands the non sequitur that he just said. He said, "We're being forced to do something that's literally impossible," which that is not possible. So at that point, when you realize that, sir, you should, well, hopefully professionals in the trucking industry, since they're mostly rednecks and country bumpkins, they've already got a plan to deal with this. I think it'll be like the Soviet Union. It'll be like the Soviet Union when people pretended to comply. And the government pretends that everyone's complying. And in the meantime, everyone ends up holding the government in utter contempt. And that's, I mean, look what happened to the Soviet Union. Why did it collapse under the weight of its own incompetence and patheticness? Because when everyone holds the government in utter contempt, that's corrosive to prosperity. And eventually it prohibits the survival of the state. Eventually. Which looking at that state, it might be a good thing that that state, that political structure at some point has to collapse in a big old heap of embarrassment and just say, man, what were we thinking about? Let's arrest all those queers who took over and let's get back to some sensible redneck country bumpkin governance. Find a bunch of men who fear God and understand right and wrong and good and evil and actually appreciate the American ideal and drag all these pathetic souls back from the brink of disaster. Speaking of that, we have to go now to the civil disobedience file, where you may or may not know this, but out in California, goats are used for targeted grazing, and it's a strategy that's been used by the governing officials in California on the local level primarily to reduce the risk of wildfires, which, in case you haven't heard, California is prone to wildfires. During wildfire season, goats are in high demand to devour weeds and shrubs to reduce the fire danger. It sounds like a pretty good arrangement, right? You got a guy with a lot of goats. You got a guy with a lot of fire danger. They make a deal. The goat. It seems great. Seems wonderful. Well, at the top of the pile of the governing officials there in California, a decision was recently made by which goat herders were recently reclassified by the California labor regulators, which is like, what? Is there a such thing as people who regulate labor in California? When did people in America get the right to regulate labor? Is this the Soviet Union? Regulating labor? That sounds like communism. Oh, that's right. It's California. So the California labor regulators who've been allowed to write laws regulating labor, if you can even get your mind around that. I thought in America, labor was regulated by how much the guy who wanted to work was willing to work for whatever pay the guy who needed the work done, and they came to an agreement, and that regulated labor. That's what I thought. But no, California has labor regulators, and they have offices in buildings where no labor occurs. None. Other people bring them their coffee. And they regulate labor. Okay, so what's happened now is these goat herders have been reclassified so that instead of being able to pay them about $3,000 a year, a season, the herd owners will have to pay about $15,000 a season. And I don't know if any of you, if you've never run a business out there, maybe this, but when your cost goes from, let's say, a high of $4,000 a month, right? When your cost goes from $4,000 a month to $14,000 a month to be compliant with the regulators, that affects business negatively because it's hard to more than quadruple your expense and stay in business. So before, herders received a monthly compensation of about $2,500 plus some overtime. With the new rule, employers will have to pay the what are now classified as farm workers an hourly rate of $1,550 plus overtime. And anyway, it goes from about $4,000 a month to about $14,000 a month, which that's a big deal. Now, the regulators up at the office where the interns bring them their coffee and they regulate labor, they just say, well, obviously you have to comply. Is there a problem? Well, I mean, obviously you're going to comply. Compliance is what we do here. This is the Office of Labor Regulatory Compliance. And the numbers, well, what difference does it make if it's a 4 or a 14? There's a 1 in front of the 4. How does that affect me? I've written the rule. We're dealing in equity and justice and equity and all of that. And by the way, we regulate labor. And so consider it regulated and just you and your goat herders figure it out. And meanwhile, Sacramento will burn to the ground in a few years because there was no goats to mitigate the fire danger. And all of the bureaucrats in their vestibules and their do they call them that the office people work in? That not vestibules, but they're little partitions made of gray metal and carpet. And they all work in there, and we've never worked in one, so neither of us can think of what they're called. Cubicle. A cubicle, that's right. All the bureaucrats in their cubicles who get burned to the ground, and they'll all get exactly what they deserve. And the goats and the goat herders will be the ones who get the last laugh. Because the goat herders, well, they won't burn to the ground. All right, so is there any more to say on that? No, except goats don't actually laugh. But sometimes they sound like they're crying. They sound like children crying sometimes, which is very disturbing. Which is why you want to keep them eating. Keep them munching and munching and munching, and then they don't make nearly as much strange, annoying, weird sounds. It's almost sound like space aliens would sound sometimes. So I know you think of goats and you don't really think about, I mean, you think of sheep, right? And you think, bah! We all have that. But like goat, does a goat have a sound in your mind when you hear goat? No. Why? Because there's a varied number of really bizarro sounds that goats make. Some of them sound like a 4-year-old being kidnapped. Bah! All right. So let's get off the goats and let's go instead. Let's go to the White House. We'll go to the White House where Breitbart is an alleged right-wing conservative. Not right-wing. I'm sorry. They wouldn't want to be classified as that inflammatory. Breitbart pawns themselves off as conservative. And so, of course, they are lamenting the fact that the pervert atop the pile of the Biden administration, that being Joe Biden, has hosted the largest White House pride celebration in history. And Breitbart is incensed and offended by that. They report that thousands attended the pride event in the White House. Our White House last Thursday. That's right. The celebration was hosted by you-know-who. You-know-who? Oh, let me tell you who. Joe Biden. Uh-huh. That's right. The largest pride celebration of its kind in history. For the White House, says Breitbart. And that is disturbing, okay? Just to think of Joe Biden with a bunch of weirdos. I mean, that just gets creepy. You don't even want to think about that. So, yeah, the White House was defiled last week by Joe Biden at a level, at least numerically, that has never before been seen. And that's worthy of, is it really even worthy of mention? Does it surprise anyone that Joe Biden would have a massive pride fest, right? I mean, Barack Obama's there. You know it's going to be big, right? Barack Obama, by the way, people were wondering, is it being implied that Barack Obama is some kind of deviant pervert? That was going around in the media this past week. And do you folks remember that Time magazine put Barack Obama on the cover with an angelic halo that was rainbow colored and it said underneath America's first gay president? Do you guys remember that? And Barack Obama loved it. He didn't complain. Barack Obama claimed to be America's first gay president, for crying out loud. And now everyone's wondering, gee, I wonder if he's gay. Is it possible that Barack Obama, maybe, possibly? Okay, now, although I'm sure he's not exclusively anything, Barack Obama would do anything with anyone to advance his financial and political career. And to express more perfectly his rebellion against God, Barack Obama would do anything with anyone at any time. So don't let me pigeonhole him into being one thing or that or this. He's anything to anyone. He's a shape-shifting, metamorphic, deviant, almost a demonic-like. It's a presence, a demonic-like character in a very dark, dark tale. But let's get back to the White House, because while Barack Obama, in his third administration here, may have just hosted the largest Pride event in the White House, it's like every Pride event that Barack Obama hosted, by nature, would be the largest ever. Because, of course, it would get bigger and bigger every year. The pile would get bigger and smellier every year, because that's the nature of things. So none of us should be shocked that the Obama administration hosted the largest Pride Fest in White House history. I want to ask a question. What's worse when it comes to defiling the White House with perverts? What's worse, the largest, the latest, or the first? The largest time, the latest time, or the first time? Which was the worst and most offensive? I would argue it was the first time. That was the worst. The first time a president invited perverts in to defile the people's house was the worst. And what Breitbart fails to mention is that it was the Bushes, Republicans, who first invited faggots in to defile the White House. 1990, in fact, Barbara Bush wrote a letter responding to PFLAG, that's Parents and Faggots Against the Legislation Against Gays, or something like that. I'm sorry, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. That Barbara Bush wrote a letter to that homo organization saying, quote, "We cannot tolerate discrimination against any individuals," unquote. And she was talking about homos. This was back when homos just wanted equal rights, not special rights. They just wanted you to decriminalize it because, you know, because why? Oh, because homos are just like black people. We just want to be able to vote and buy houses. We haven't been able to do that up in... Anyway, so Barbara Bush writes a friendly letter to PFLAG. This is considered, by the way, the first positive statement in the history from the White House in support of promoting perverts as if they were normal people. That's the first time it ever happened. And it happened when Barbara Bush, a Republican, wrote a letter to a pile of homos over at PFLAG. And then, in 1990, the Hate Crime Statistics Act was the first federal law to recognize and name lesbian and bisexual people. And gay people, too, by the way. I don't want to leave anybody out. Gay activists were then invited to the White House during the signing ceremony by George H.W. Bush, Republican. And then naturally, after that, the pile just gets bigger and bigger every year. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I was waiting to see if that was the most famous gay bass line in all of history, which, of course, is from Another One Bites the Dust, but that was different. That was a different one.
I don't have that.
We don't have that. We don't have any records by Queen, do we?
No.
No records. No tapes, no 8-tracks, no CDs, no downloads. we don't play that. So now we go from one pile to the next. We go to the government schools. Reason number 2036 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Travis Allen, Travis was his name, was a girls' soccer coach up in Vermont at a middle school, Randolph Union Middle School High School. Randolph Union Deep State School is what I wrote here in my notes. And he was a soccer coach, and as much that's a problem right there. There's a guy who's a soccer coach, a girl's soccer coach. I don't like that. I'm uncomfortable with that, and I just want to let you know. But Travis, anyway, he was suspended for a Facebook post in which he referred to a transgendered girl as a boy. Mm-hmm. And by the way, just so you know, because it gets a little confusing, a transgender girl is a boy. I just want to be clear. So he misgendered a girl who dressed as a boy and demanded people treat her as a boy, and he accidentally or unintentionally or maybe intentionally, but he called her a girl on a Facebook post. And so the school district levied a charge against Travis Allen, girls soccer coach. They leveled a charge of misgendering against him, which is one of the more serious charges you can be charged with as a teacher in the deep state schools there in the state of Virginia. Well, a lawsuit, and there's no criminal charges. Misgendering is not yet criminal in the state of Virginia. The pile hasn't gotten that high yet. So, no criminal charges, but there was he was basically fired. Fired for misgendering. And then he sued. And now, in a settlement with the district, Travis Allen, girls soccer coach, has been given his job back. And that, this is, what's that?
He took the job back.
He took the job back. Hey, he's a girls soccer coach. What's he going to do? It's not like he can actually go out and work. Poor guy. Poor sap. The settlement. We have a quote here from the law firm that was paid through donations and then eventually a financial settlement with the school to litigate the case. They say this settlement is a resounding victory for freedom of speech. We're grateful that the school recognized it was wrong. That's according to what's the pile of lawyer? I shouldn't call him a pile. That's not, I don't want to imply that. Nobody at the Alliance Defending Fakeness. I don't even know if this was them. It's Phil Scheckler, senior counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom. I knew it. The Alliance Defending Fake Freedom. They declared a big victory and they say the school admitted it was wrong. They say this is a resounding victory. We're grateful the school recognized that it was wrong to suspend Blake from his coaching position simply for exercising their freedom. Blah, 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 blah. The lawyers drone on. First of all, Mr. Scheckler, senior counsel at Alliance Defending Fake Freedom. If I'm not mistaken, this was a settlement. And I've been involved in legal settlements, and the one thing I know about settlements is nobody admits anything was wrong. So the school district did not admit they were wrong. In fact, they offered you some amount of money so they wouldn't have to, and then they gave this poor sap girls soccer coach his job back. So you can't declare that this was a victory because they recognized they were wrong. They recognized no such thing. And nor did you force them to recognize it by beating them in court and risking losing because you're just a lawyer. And really what this is about is not defending fake freedom. It's about making money. Yeah. And the thing about the Alliance Defending Freedom is they make money on both sides. See, they get settlements in cases and they get money there. And then they send out letters and they get money from gullible Republicans and evangelicals who think they're defending freedom when actually they're just a part of the machine. They're part of the justice system in didn't I have a name for it? I think I came up with a name for it. Now I've forgotten it. It's like the military it's like the military industrial complex of Dwight Eisenhower, but it's the judicio socio complex. I had a name for it. I'll work on that for the next show and try to come up with a more pithy name for the just system. Maybe that was it. It's just justice system. And they're just a part of it. So the Alliance Defending Freedom is actually the alliance making Christians comfortable with the degenerates molesting their children at the government schools. That's what the alliance is actually doing. By declaring this a victory and getting this guy a job back, how could any sane person want to work for an institution that you have to sue... You have to sue them just to keep the trannies from molesting the girls in the locker room. And what sane attorney would encourage you to keep the job and then declare that a victory? Hey, don't worry, Doug. They actually have a strategy. They're just waiting for the right time to spring it. The Alliance Defending Freedom and this soccer coach, you don't think they'd actually take the job back and actually go back and work for the peanuts that they're going to give to this poor sap coach? No, they've got a grand strategy, Doug. Q and them they're going to spring it at the right time. They're just waiting for the signal from Q. And then they're all going to save America. Okay, all right. I've finally become aware of, familiar with the details behind QAnon through a friend of mine who's obviously into that. And he said, Doug, it's just, we're gonna wake up and save America. And I said, that's beautiful for you to think that, but I mean, you need to plan as if otherwise, because I don't think anybody's going to wake up and save anything, my friend. I think that we just need to be prepared and to prepare our children to be prepared to recover from the collapse or to carry through the slow motion train wreck that is the collapse of America over the next several decades, holding their head high, being able to preach the gospel and knowing where they came from and knowing where they're going, so that while all around them are losing their heads, they can keep theirs. That's what we need to do. But there's not going to be a MAGA awakening and save America. Just stop it with that. All right, so but let's go now. Speaking of that, we'll go back to Canada, which, by the way, when I was a kid, Canada was just like America, you know, except there was a lake between here and there. That was the only difference. Their accent was a little more, it was a little bit colder, right? Their nickel was worth 4 cents. But most of the stores in my town when I was a little kid, they would take Canadian quarters and Canadian nickels. So you're a little kid, you go down the store, you don't know the difference between a Canadian quarter and a Canadian, an American quarter. You give it to the lady at the store for the candy. She doesn't care. She throws it in the thing. She gives you the candy. It's Canadian quarter, whatever. Well, anyways, we go back to Canada now where, oh, wait a minute. This isn't even Canada. This is Pennsylvania, for crying out loud. I thought this has to be Canada. Surely this isn't happening in America, but it is. It's Pennsylvania. By the way, when I was a little kid, New York, Pennsylvania, Canada, they were all the same. You could go from one to the other, and you still knew that you were a free human being. Now, not so much. Reading Pennsylvania. Sorry, Canada. I don't mean to. Anyway, Damon Atkins is a Christian man. He is a straight white Christian. Actually, you don't have to say straight, because that goes without saying. He was a Christian. You don't have to say white either, because it doesn't matter. He could have been a black guy. He could have been an Asian guy. He could have been a Mexican guy. In fact, it's kind of surprising that he was a white guy. It's actually encouraging for some of us white guys after watching the Mexicans collapse against the Dodgers last week. This is Damon Atkins, the great white hope, was attempting to read 1 Corinthians 14:33 on a public sidewalk. That's right. When police confronted him. And by the way, the first Corinthians 14:33, it's not Romans chapter 1. It just says, oh, by the way, this was at a Pride Fest. Did I have to even mention that? It was at a Pride Fest, of course, because the homos are pouring out of the closets, marching down the streets, right? Wrapped in what little rainbow attire they wear. And Damon Atkins was attempting to read 1 Corinthians 14:33. By the way, it reads, quote, "For God is not a God of disorder, but of peace, and in all the meetings of God's holy people." I wish I had grabbed my King James. That's probably some new. Anyway, it's not like Romans 1 where it says that they'll receive in their bodies the due punishment for their deeds and all. You know, the Romans 1, they don't like that at the Pride Fest. That's what we used to read when we used to go down to the Pride Fest. We used to go down to the Pride Fest. I went there, I think, 1 year. 1 year I went down to the Pride Fest and I was street preaching and I said, okay, I'll never come back here. I mean, without a crew-served automatic weapon would be the only other way I would go down there. Because, man, those people were vicious. Vicious. I mean, we were physically attacked, beaten, punched. One guy's teeth was knocked out. I just said, you know what? These people can go to hell. I'm not going to witness to these people. I'll leave that to someone else. And Damon Atkins here, he steps up, right? And he's going to read 1 Corinthians. Well, a police officer confronts him on videotape, and he says to the Christian, hey, let them have their day. That's what the cop said to the Christian about the fags. He told the Christian to shut up, let them have their day. Officers then stood between Atkins and the crowd, right? Probably for Atkins' own protection. And when Atkins began reading from the Bible, an officer said, "That's it, you're done," and arrested him. Arrested him after telling him that he had to let the faggots have their day. Then he reads the Bible. The cop says, "That's it, you're done," arrests him. Police then said Atkins was not arrested for reading the Bible, but his noise level is what it, his noise level in the middle of a pride fest. Right? His noise level. Okay. What the cops meant was we could hear him reading the Bible and that offended us. So it was his noise level. So they were at least somewhat truthful about that. The chief of police says he was arrested for being disorderly. His volume level that he was a heckling. He was heckling a pre-planned permitted event, they said, as they continued to just make stuff up because the cops didn't know what to say. You know what the thing is? The cops intuitively arrested this guy. Why? Because they thought he was doing something wrong. And that gives you an insight into the heart of the police these days. It's terrifying. After they arrested him, they couldn't figure out why. They just knew at the moment they thought they should arrest him, so they did. And then they tried to explain it, and they couldn't. They started making up things like heckling. Whoa, heckling? Okay. Anyway, eventually they dropped the charges against the guy, and they had to let him go. But what they didn't do, what I haven't heard yet from the police in Reading, Pennsylvania, is to stand up and say, you know what, we were wrong. And it's the fact that this crowd of deranged, perverted homosexuals, they scared us, is what happened. And we arrested this guy because we thought that the homos might attack us. Which I think that's really a good part of what motivated the cops here, was their own fear. Because all the good cops who have testosterone, they've all left. And what you've got now is a bunch of feminized bureaucrats who literally do anything and they're afraid of anything. And they're just low-level functionary bureaucrats who will arrest criminals. Yeah, they'll arrest criminals, but they'll also feed Jews into an oven. Host Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with me. And so the story there in Reading, Pennsylvania simply makes the point that the Bible at any volume at a pride event is inciting. And yes, it's pre-planned. Praise the Lord, Damon Atkins is guilty as charged with everything. That he was too loud. It was pre-planned. It was meant to incite. And the thing is, none of those are a crime. If you're reading from the Bible and you're preaching against a bunch of deviants who are leading themselves and their friends and the people they love straight to hell, and you stand up and you're too loud and you incite and you pre-plan, it's not a crime. In fact, you're doing God's work. You're doing the Lord's work, Damon. And we're thankful that the police had to drop the charges just out of their own embarrassment. But it's just a matter of time before reading from the Bible at a pride event will be a crime as defined in whatever local code, criminal code. They'll make it an actual crime. And that's what we have to prepare our children to get through. Not America returning to its greatness. That's not what we need. No, we need to prepare our children to deal with the fact that they are going to be criminalized. Heck, it might happen in my lifetime when I'm old and weak and I can't even fight back. Oh. Okay, so from there, speaking of too old, too weak to fight back, we go to Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Straight to Hell file, where the 75-year-old pathetic actor? Wait a second. He's not an actor. He's a steroid-pumped-up bodybuilder and not even a comedian. I mean, the guy doesn't qualify. He's an entertainer. Why? Do you know, like any other freak show? Entertainer. The 75-year-old entertainer gave his views on personal faith to Danny DeVito. At which point, anybody reading is like, okay, so? Why am I reading this? How is this news that Arnold Schwarzenegger had a conversation with Danny DeVito about anything? Schwarzenegger, 75, DeVito, 78, during their shared disclosure on the topic. Oh, I see why. It was featured in Interview Magazine as if it mattered. Has anyone ever heard of Interview Magazine? Is that even real? Or did somebody just make this up? This could be fake news. Anyway, they had an article called What's in the Future for Us? Danny DeVito at 78 and Arnold Schwarzenegger at 75. I'll tell you what's in the future. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll get to that. According to People Magazine, who picked up the story from the fake Interview Magazine, that's how this made the wire. According to People Magazine, which, by the way, People Magazine, right? This is the reality that these two guys, Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger, this is the reality these two spiritual and intellectual behemoths inhabit. Their reality consists of throwaway periodicals that women buy to kill time at the airport. That's their reality. That's how important Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger are. Uh-huh. And so we be interested in the story. Why? Well, because they're celebrities. And, you know, if you were sitting at the airport and you had a half an hour to kill, you'd read it, right? They're important people. Anyway, here's what Arnold Schwarzenegger said regarding eternity. He said, "Oh, we don't know what happens with the soul and the spiritual stuff. I'm not an expert. But I know that the body, as we see each other now, we will never see each other like that again." Unquote. And so, Arnie, yeah, I mean, that's true. We're not going to see your body like all decrepit and wastoid like you are right now. We'll never see that again. Thankfully, nobody wants to see that again, Arnold. He goes on about, he says death is a topic he feels uncomfortable with, adding that heaven is a fantasy. Uh-huh. He called heaven a fantasy, which for Arnold Schwarzenegger, yeah, heaven's a fantasy, yeah. For him, yeah, I would have to agree. He said that he's lost about 15 friends from his bodybuilding days and just in the past 20 years. And it's forced him to shift his perspective on the possibility of an afterlife. So how is it you're Arnold Schwarzenegger, you're watching all your friends over the past 20 years, an average of one a year dies. And they're all dropping like flies, right? And it causes you to shift your perspective on the possibility of an afterlife, and you've decided that there's no possibility. It's like, Arnie, are you that shallow for real? I mean, are you really that? Do you really believe that People Magazine matters? And that the write-ups you had in Variety over the years are going to be... Do you really think that's it? Maybe Arnold thinks that's enough. And maybe there's been sycophants around Arnold for his entire career who've made him actually believe that making a movie and getting written up in a magazine actually matters in the big picture. And so Arnie's, he's good with that. And so, Arnold, I'm just here to tell you that you are going to exist forever, Arnold. And you're going to exist together either with God or away from God. And when God sends people away from him, they go to a place that's not good. Why? Because God's good. And if you don't want to be with God, by definition, you're going to go somewhere that's not good. And that's where you're headed, Arnold, and that's no fantasy, buddy. It's coming at you like a freight train. Uh-huh. That light you see is not the light at the end of the tunnel. It's not the light at the end of the tunnel, Arnold. All right, and I shouldn't laugh about it, but when people like that shake their fist and mock God and cause other people to cheer about it, I like to mock them. I get some satisfaction out of mocking them and hoping that I would offend them enough to just get their attention and they might think about what I'm saying. Because the one thing that's coming, surely, for Arnold Schwarzenegger, as it is for all of us, is death. The end of the world is right around the corner for every one of us. And speaking of that, that brings us to the big story of the week, aliens! Yes. That's right. We start with the whistleblower. You've all heard it, right? Uh-huh. There was a whistleblower. Let's see. Last weekend, Matt Walsh published a post claiming aliens are real. He posted that up on Facebook. Yep. Many conservative thinkers, this is according to, I can't read this, American Thinker. Oh, the American Thinker. This is Michael. It's either, yeah, Michael Iacchetta over at American Thinker. Which, by the way, AmericanThinker.com, one of the best websites to hear upon occasion from people who actually are God-fearing patriots who love Jesus Christ and America and the family and all the stuff that goes along with the American ideal. The American Thinker is a great place for it. Michael Iacchetta is one of their best contributors. And he reminds us that conservative thinkers have long spoken of Twitter as a tool of the deep state. So having read Matt Walsh's alien post, I visited Twitter to see if it was also covering the alien UFO issue. Sure enough, guess what? A feature on Tucker Carlson's new show on Twitter, which debuted the same day Walsh posted his views on UFOs on Facebook, Carlson mentioned the same UFO story that Matt Walsh had referred to in his article. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, says Michael Iacchetta, this is last Wednesday, he says, yesterday, last Tuesday, a former Air Force officer came forward to reveal that the U.S. government has crashed non-human-made aircraft and the bodies of the pilots who flew those aircraft. That's what the former military office, this former military officer revealed, and it was clear that he was telling the truth, said Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson said it was clear that he was telling the truth. In other words, UFOs are actually real, and apparently so is extraterrestrial life, said Tucker Carlson. Quote, now we know, unquote. That's what Tucker Carlson said on his first or second show over there on Twitter. Michael Iacchetta reminds us Carlson did not present evidence to support his claim other than the say-so of this intelligence officer, which, okay. And then Iacchetta sent me over to Tuesday's edition of a Substack called Coffee and COVID, which I've never read before, by a guy named Jeff Childers. After reading this article, I immediately subscribed. And I am considering even a paid subscription for Mr. Childers because, well, I'll let me finish with Michael Iacchetta here at American Thinker. Iacchetta says maybe Matt Walsh, Tucker Carlson, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who all talked about UFOs and aliens this past week, are performing an important public service. Or maybe the three are revealing the truth about aliens on the same day. And maybe it's all just a weird coincidence. So maybe they're right. Maybe the aliens are about to invade. Maybe it's all just a weird coincidence. Or perhaps there's a more disturbing explanation, which, of course, all of us are always more interested in the more disturbing, right? Nobody wants it just to be a coincidence. And then we all just chuckle and say, boy, that was really weird. No, we want the secret, super secret information of the more disturbing sort. And so for that, not really for that, actually. Just for more clarification, we go deeper into the aliens file over at Coffee and COVID, coffeeandcovid.com, which is a Substack by the aforementioned gentleman whose name I should mention. His name is Jeff Childers. He talks about, the headline is, officials say U.S. has retrieved craft of non-human origin. Right? And he says, if this story were real, you might expect all the things that we've seen go on over the past week, but he says it's not so much what's included in the story that seems odd. It's what's missing. He says, where's the government pushback? How did this story brave the deep state's censorship gauntlet? And then he compares this to the Hunter Biden laptop whistleblower, That guy couldn't get his story out with a flamethrower and a nuclear bomb, right? This story erupts like a volcano. He says, where's the government pushback? How did this story brave the deep state censorship gauntlet? Where are the hit pieces accusing this intelligence officer whistleblower of being a pedophile or a Putin stooge or something like that? Like everyone who's attacked Tucker, not Tucker Carlson, like everyone who's attacked Hunter Biden has been compared to, they've been called every name in the book. How come that's not happening to this guy? And he says, by the way, why didn't this whistleblower, quote unquote, get rolled like the FBI whistleblower did? What about all these FBI whistleblowers who've been trying to point out how the government's been colluding with Twitter and they're basically a bunch of communists, a bunch of communist tyrants? All those whistleblowers, they can't make it out of the basement without fearing for their lives. This guy's everywhere all of a sudden, all at once. And so Mr. Coffee and COVID, his name is Jeff Childers. He says, my antenna bristle at anything that could justify another worldwide state of emergency. Since the pandemic failed to accomplish the Great Reset, and another 100-year pandemic seems unlikely to be accepted by anyone, what else might they have down their blood-stained bag of tricks? How about this? How might the world respond to evidence of hostile aliens? How do you think they'd respond? Fearfully? Maybe? Would the world leaders call for an emergency coordinated response? Is there maybe a scenario under which the entire world would need to go under martial law and under a universal ID because we just don't know where the aliens are and who might be collaborating with them? They might be walking among us. Be afraid. So Jeff Childers says, I'm profoundly skeptical and suspicious of this developing U.S. UFO story. Welcome to the pool, Jeff. We've been talking about this for well over 10 years. We've been predicting the aliens stepping from behind the curtain. And we've also suspected that it might be a tool of the tyrants to take even more of our freedoms. But now that we don't have any left, now it's a matter of forget about them taking our freedoms. What they're putting us in the gulag and our children in the gulag. That's the next. No, I know we do still have some freedoms. We're free to work and we're free to spend our money and go to the restaurants and everything seems fine, right? Like we've recovered and we've come back from all that, Doug. You're a bit hysterical over the fact that America was lost. It's not lost. Everything's fine. Relax. Just look to the sky. All right. Now, from the Dim New World file, if the aliens doesn't work, listen to this. This is from Jayanta Bhattacharya. He's one of the doctors who, is he a doctor? I think he's a doctor. Jay Bhattacharya, a physician, epidemiologist, and health economist. He's a professor at Stanford. One of the first doctors who stood up and said, wait a second, the way we're responding to this epidemic is insane. This is not right. Something's wrong. He's one of the first. And so we're thankful for him. He wrote in brownstone.org, what if the coronavirus pandemic was not a once in a century event, but the beginning of a new era of regular deadly respiratory viral pandemics? Well, says Jay, the Biden administration is already planning for this. They've unveiled a national strategy to develop pharmaceutical firms' capacity to create vaccines within 130 days of a pandemic emergency declaration. The Biden plan, meaning the Soros-Obama plan, the Soros-Obama plan enshrines former President Donald Trump's Operation Warp Speed as the model. It will require gain-of-function research in novel vaccines, and all the while the studies are underway and the vaccines are getting ready, politicians will be under pressure to impose lockdowns to keep the population safe. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's the aliens or whether it's the next respiratory virus, what we can expect is that the sheeple will go along. They will. They've proven that throughout the COVID hysteria and panic. That basically, I hate to say this, and I hate to offend anyone out there, but people who still think that there are this underground there's this underground bastion of true Americans, right, who still wave the flag and who still love God and country, and they think that the people who stormed the beaches of Normandy are still alive, and I'm afraid to break this to you. They're all gone. And their kids ain't half the man they are, and their kids are even less, and their kids are even less. And we're at the point where the generation that is of the age of the men who stormed the beaches at Normandy, as long as they have beer, weed, porn, and sports, they'll go along with anything. And I think the powers that be are going to make sure that they have all of those in the gulag available to the generation destined to populate said gulag. And meanwhile, if you want to know how insane things are, let's go to Dresden in Germany, where progressive authorities in the city of Dresden, Germany, have named a street after Danish painter Einar Wegner. Now, you might say, well, what's wrong with that? Name a street after a painter. It's good for us to honor our past. And by the way, folks, Dresden, one of the most bombed cities in World War II, from February 13th through the 15th, 1945, in the final months of the war, 800 Allied bombers dropped 2,700 tons of explosive and incendiaries and burned Dresden to the ground, just vaporized the city in World War II. It was a major center. Its destruction was intended to overwhelm German authorities and services and clog all transportation routes with throngs of refugees. The Allied assault came less than a month after troops had discovered the atrocities at Auschwitz, and it was viewed as a punishing lashing out against the Germans for their gross immorality. The Dresden bombing was intended to terrorize the civilian population, and it was effective. And so Dresden has named a street after painter Einar Wegner. After living most of his life as a man, Wegner abandoned his male identity to live as Lily, undergoing one of the first sex change surgeries in history back in 1930. Speaking of the decision to name the new street after Wegner, the mayor, Dirk, hailed the painter as a pioneer. Wegner died about a year, less than a year after his sex change surgery. And he's being celebrated as a pioneer. He basically killed himself by chopping parts of his body off in a mentally deranged state, and he's being honored in Dresden. The modern advance of perversion. You know, I told you about the bombing of Dresden. It was designed to terrorize the civilian population. Well, the perversion coming now is designed to overwhelm and decimate what's left of the rear guard action standing between us and 1,000 years of darkness. And we stand between those who would name a street after a deranged maniac who killed himself and those who still love Jesus Christ, serve God and country, and care and want to keep our kids out of the gulag. And that's why we're here at the Weekly Worldview. Thanks for tuning in. To the Lord, Terry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.